Radio.
Welcome to Color Me Dead. This is a true crime podcast, and we talk about murder and fuckery most foul in detail while using the darkest of humor.
If you don't like words like fuck and cunt, then you probably shouldn't listen. But if you do, then join us while we fuck your feelings.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to episode 155.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Parrot. Some more.
Yes, some more. Parrot Senior. 2. Just a little bit. But first, how do they find us on social media?
If you guys want to check us out on social media, you can find us at Color Me Dead Pod on Twitter, at Color Me Dead Podcast on Instagram, Gory_Nikki on Instagram, or Color Me Dead Angel on Instagram. Facebook, we have the Color Me Dead Podcast page. It might be a little difficult to find. We have had
issues.
Yeah, we've had two of our groups shut down for community standards, so we no longer have a group page to promote, and so there's that. If you guys want some merch,
you can get some.
Mm-hmm.
At colormedeadpod.threadless.com or legracreations.com.
Guys want custom Color Me Dead, it's a LeGras.
Yes, it is.
If you guys are ever having issues on one of your podcast apps, you know that you can always go to ageofradio.org/colormedead, and you can listen to the show there. You can shop the bazaar. You can donate to our Patreon. You can check out other shows. We highly encourage you to check out the entire list of sister shows and brother shows.
So many brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters. Pod fam.
Sister Jansen? Is she there? No. She not.
And that Patreon, should you want to donate to our Patreon, you can do so.
You can do it at Age of Radio. There's a button on our page on Age of Radio, or you can go to Color Me Dead Pod. You can go to patreon.com/colormedeadpodcast. And there you can find everything. Sometimes it's a little glitchy, but we thank everybody that donated. A lot of stuff just went out. So hopefully you got yours. If you didn't, let me know.
Enjoy your perks.
Yes, enjoy your perks. If you're new within the last month, yours has not gone. Has not.
Has not.
Making up words now. Has not gone out yet. But they will. You can send us shit to P.O. Box 1610, Fernal, Utah 84078. Physical mail. I don't know if you can physically mail yourself.
Please don't physically mail yourself.
Or any body parts.
No body parts.
Nope.
If you have anything to share with us, you need to make any questions, comments, concerns, emotional outbursts, please send those to colormedeadpodcast@gmail.com.
We got an email.
Oh, yeah.
That made me happy. Did you read that one?
You and me both, yeah.
Yes. I screenshotted it because it made me happy. It's from Timothy Jansen. So thank you for your email.
Brother Timothy Jansen. Your comments. So thank you for your email first and foremost, because I swear to God, those always come in when we need them the most.
Big time.
It meant a lot to us, so thank you.
It really did, yeah. Enough that I was like, screenshot, aw.
You're like, I'm going to put this in my favorites so that when I'm having a fucked up day, I can pull this up and be like, ah.
For real.
Yeah.
This is it right here. While we're talking about that, I'm just going to say, I don't know if we've said it really before, episodes are going to be a little shorter to make it more manageable for us to get out. That means less recording time and less editing so we can fit it in, because we're both freaking buried as hell right now. But
amen. Life is off the meter.
Yes. And it's a good way buried, but it's still fucking a lot.
It's a little hectic, so.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Here we go. And if we miss episodes, that's why too. Like, there's just so much fucking shit going on.
So thanks for sticking with us through everything.
Yes. And that's why our Patreons mean a lot to us. You always do, but right now more than ever, because you're sticking with us in these times where we're...
These strange and unusual times.
Strange and unusual times.
I was almost upset when I looked down and saw something on my cup, and I was like, oh, it's that fucking mint.
Oh, it's my mint. So I'm going to recap the books used for the research in this. It's The Dahmer Book by Stephen Lampley and A Father's Story by Lionel Dahmer. When we last left you, Jeff had just graduated from high school and he hadn't yet started killing people. He was still dismembering all the roadkill and all that shit. However, the murder thoughts were really running through his mind quite thick by now. In Lionel's book, he goes into depth about the troubles at home. And we talked about the ups and downs with Joyce. He goes into a lot more. He goes in a lot of detail about it. And it's really, really interesting. And just that would take a couple of episodes to like dive into all of the shit that he talks about their relationship. And it's really interesting. So if you get the chance, check that book out. It's a unicorn though. Like, we are lucky that we got it from Kate. Kate Horst, thank you for sending it to us. But if you get the opportunity, take it to read it, do it. It's like about as rare and about as pricey as the Pee Wee Gaskins book, but not as violating.
Sorry.
It will get your heartstrings though. It's like, it's painful. You can, throughout the book, you can see where he's blaming himself for not catching this and not catching that. And the things that a parent would obviously normally do in that situation, because you would go back and be like,
what did I fucking do? Like, what signs did I miss?
Mm-hmm. I should have seen this. I should have noticed that. And I'm like, God damn it, dude. Whether you're right or wrong, ouch, you're hurting my heart just a little bit. So Joyce's father, Joyce being Jeff's mater, Joyce's father died in 1977. He was an addict and had put her through hell during her life, which kind of explains why she was a little bit of a shit show there. Lionel expressed how much he didn't know how to help her throughout the relationship because he just didn't understand what she had been through and what she needed. So he was like, I see that you're upset. I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. But he tried, like, from his point of view, he tried. And then
I fully understand, though, like, not everybody knows how to help. Mm-mm. And when you don't know how to do something, in my book, if I don't know how to do something perfectly to where I'm going to do it, like, I can't explain it. If I'm not going to do it 100% and make it perfect, then I don't want to fucking do it.
No.
And more often than not, I'll extend an offer of assistance and the way that I do it is not fucking helpful. Like, you know what I mean? Like, right. I know that people say things trying to help, but you end up hindering.
Right.
It's kind of like when I'm in the middle of a really shitty depression, my brother, God bless him, he's always trying to be my cheerleader. He's like, let's get up and go out and get some sunshine and go hiking and da 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 da. And I'm like, bruh, I barely had the fucking wherewithal to go take a shower and brush my teeth. Give me a second. You know what I mean? So I know
fuck off with your sunshine, asshole. I know,
you fucking, what do you have to be so goddamn happy about? But when he's trying to be uplifting and help, you know what I mean? To me, I know that he's trying to help, but I'm like, get off my dick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like he was like, I don't understand this. So he talked about, you know, how Joyce had all those seizures and all those problems.
Right.
He said that some of the doctors, not saying they were 100% right, some of the doctors had mentioned that a lot of it was mental.
Perhaps she was inducing her. Like, I've actually heard about this. People that stress themselves out to a point that they can actually have like tremors and physical ailment, like seizure.
Yeah. And so then she was taking pills to deal with it. The pills weren't working because it wasn't as physical.
It wasn't like, it wasn't neurological. Mm-hmm. It was something.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, that's just his point of view. So it is what it is, but I get it. So when they were at her father's funeral, she told Lionel that when she saw her father's dead body, she felt that their marriage was also dead. Like,
oh, wow.
Whoa. Okay. He later found out that she had an affair So I know that their relationship was strained anyway. So I don't think the affair is what broke the camel's back. I think the straw that broke the... I like to only say half sayings. This is my George Bidening. I renamed it because it's George, you know, you get it.
Yep.
The Bush Biden
situation. The Bush Biden situation.
I call it George Biden. I also walk upstairs like he does. Just say it. In the divorce, she was supposed to sell him the house. She would be living there with David and Jeff until the sale was final, and then would then Lionel would move back in. However, she took off. This is when she went to go find herself.
Okay.
That cleared it up for me because I was like, so everybody's like, fuck Jeff, you stay in the house by yourself. Like, I did not get this at all. But Lionel straightened it out for me. He didn't know. In his mind, she was living at the house until the sale was final. This, you know, the sale of their house to him because of the divorce. And so he thought that the three of them were living at the house while he was at a hotel. And not the case. So, June 18th of 1978, Jeff was driving a four-door blue car that his father had left for him. Father does not talk about this part in his book, so I don't know if that's one of the things that was supposed to be, like, in the divorce here, you get this car, you know, or, like, I don't know, that wasn't straightened out anywhere for me that I could find. Jeff saw a teenager hiking shirtless and picked him up.
Okay.
He was 6 feet tall, about 150 pounds, with shoulder length, light brown hair.
6 feet tall at 150?
Yeah, he was a skinty.
Yeah, he was.
I used your word.
Lanky.
Yep. But Jeff liked it. Jeff liked what he looked like.
I bet he did.
He had a dental retainer on a necklace. Does that take anybody back in the day? Who puts their retainer on a necklace, though? It's like, I always saw people put them in their paper towels and in their pockets. That's how people lost theirs.
Yes. So let me just...
Lunch tray?
Oh, God damn it. I broke mine because I would take it out. That's why mine was cemented to my teeth for so fucking long. Was because those were incredibly expensive to replace.
Yeah.
And they were about $400 every time you fucking broke one.
Yep.
And orthodontics are incredibly fragile. So I would continually, like, I threw one away because I put it in a fucking paper towel.
At lunch and threw your whole tray away? Yep.
And my mom and dad replaced that one. And then I would pop it out and stick it in my back pocket. And then I fucking forgot and sat on it, broke it, didn't want to tell them. Went home and tried to fucking Gorilla Glue it, JB Weld it back together. That's what it was. It wasn't Gorilla Glue. It was fucking JB Weld.
Oh, God.
And two things happened. A, I put the fucking JB Weld on there, and then as it, like, was kind of dry, I put it in my mouth to form it, right?
Oh, fuck.
And ended up with a chemical burn on the roof of my mouth.
Ow.
Okay, fucking mistake number one. Well, mistake number two was that it had already started to... solidify. So even though I put it in my mouth and tried to form it the way that it was supposed to be, it was still a little bit off. So it actually pushed one of my fucking teeth back.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because my teeth were still very, like, impressionable with movement. Anyway, the point being that I popped it out of my mouth in front of my mom and she fucking saw the hillbilly fucking engineering that took place and was like, what the fuck? And she looked at my teeth. She, like, grabs me by the cheeks and pulls my face in. And she realizes that, like, my top teeth alignment is out. Yeah, dude. Moms are fucking psychos.
I didn't wear my bottom retainer because I didn't like it. So I was like, one or the other. And so my bottom teeth are all fucked up. They're already,
I love that crooked. We decide after our parents put all this fucking time and money into our teeth. We're just like, right? No.
Well, I was like, I wore my fucking braces for 5 goddamn years and my bottom teeth weren't my problem. So I was like, after 5 years of being in the right spot, I think we're good. It's my top teeth I need to worry about. Well, my top teeth are still fine, minus the ones that fell out because I didn't brush them like I was supposed to when I had braces.
Well, you know, it could certainly be worse. You could have, you know, overbrushed them to where you took the enamel off your teeth and then they rotted out of your skull.
Well, either way, we're both fucking toothless and 40, right?
Well, I have my front teeth. Like, I have those ones. I have some chewing teeth on this side. I have a chewing tooth. But I have the ones that matter. I'm working on it, all right?
I know. I want to get mine fixed so bad. Okay. Well, so retainers. These days, do they Do they put them in permanent now?
I think that they can put the wire behind.
Yeah.
And like put some sealant or whatever. Mine was like my retainer on the back of my bottom teeth was a permanent retainer.
I wish I would have done that. But yeah, I don't see kids with retainers all the time anymore. Mm-mm. And so I was wondering.
Well, and I think they have more like they can do the Invisalign retainer as well.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah. So if you don't know what a retainer is, look it up. They were fun. But he had his. He had his on a necklace around his neck, which is semi-important right now. So just remember the retainer on the necklace.
Twas a retainer.
Yes. So Jeff really liked what he looked like. And so he was like, I think that I might need to pick him up. This kid's name was Stephen Mark Hicks, and he was 18 years old as well. Stephen was on his way to a concert, but agreed to go to Jeff's house first for some beers before the concert. This is the 70s. This was a normal thing, from this what was, I gather.
Dude, it was a normal thing when I was a fucking youngster.
Right. You like, hitchhike. Oh, you want to come have a beer? Sure.
Dude, the thing, I'm surprised I fucking lived through my young adulthood because I was a pretty wild and free teen / 20-somethings. You know what I mean? Like, I was going to fucking Mexico to party and get high and like...
via hitchhiking.
With like, no, I drove and parked on the U.S. side and then would walk over. But like, dude, I was going and drinking with people I didn't know, taking drugs with people I didn't know in a country I am not fucking from. You know what I mean? Like, dude, and that was the 90s. And no, let's be honest, that was the 2000s, the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, times ain't changed that fucking much.
Right. Right. Except for now we can track your cell phone if you go hitchhiking and all
true
that
story.
Shit.
We can so, like, life is quite a bit different now. Like, we can find you.
Yes. So they go to Jeff's room when they get to Jeff's house and are drinking their beer. After about 2 hours, Stephen said he needed to head to the concert that he was trying to go to anyway. And Jeff didn't like that decision. He was like, nope, don't leave me. Can't leave me. Nope. And he got upset, and they got into a physical altercation. Dahmer came up behind him, clubbed him with a barbell, and knocked him out. When he fell to the floor, he then choked him with the barbell to death. So he had
put it over his,
over his neck, and was just, because I think it was just like the hand, you know, for curls and shit.
Let this be a teachable moment that this is always why you need a spotter when you're actually lifting.
Right.
Unless, you know what I mean? So if you intend to use anything that you're going to put over your chest where you breathe,
yeah,
please get a spotter.
And I wonder, I just had a thought. I wonder if it really was like a big, like 45-pound barbell that he just whacked him on the noodle with. Or if it, in my mind, it was just like a hand.
I'm going to say it was probably no more than 20, 25 pounds. Right. Like if you're going to swing it overhead.
Yeah.
Because Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't a big dude.
Not huge. He was bigger than I thought. Yeah, so he chokes him till he dies. And then proceeds to stand over his dead body and masturbate.
Because don't homicidal rages make you need?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course they do. So once he blew his load, he drug the body to the crawl space of his house and left him there until the next day.
Okay.
Why not?
Like you do.
Well, then the next day he figures he better get rid of the evidence. So he dismembers the body and puts the parts into 3 different trash bags. He intended to dump them in a gully somewhere. Smart, Jeffy. He put the... Okay, after they're dismembered in bags, he puts the bags in the back seat of the car. Back seat, not the trunk, the back seat.
So, but how did... All right, so my question, back to the dismemberment. Do you know how he dismembered and what went in what bag?
No, I don't. And I don't know, and this is from two different books. They didn't really go into the details of the dismembering. It was just that he cut him up into pieces. So I'm thinking it was, you know...
I wonder if
he did a hacksaw job or something.
Oh, rough.
But well, in one thing I read too, it said that. Well, this is later that, but after it decomposed, he like peeled the skin off of it.
I'll get to that in a minute.
I was just curious, like, how he decided, like, apparently there's a process that one is supposed to fucking do when you dismember.
Yeah, I don't think he, like, Fred Wested it or anything. I think he just, like, quartered him type situation.
Okay. Like make it easier to fucking lift and carry.
In in bags.
It was only 150 pounds, so, like, what, 225 of dead weight?
Yeah. It's not... Yeah, and he was long and lanky, so I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at the victim, I promise.
No, but, well, so he puts the bags.
I take it back. I don't promise. I may have laughed at him.
Right. Maybe.
Maybe.
He puts the bags in the backseat of the car because apparently the trunk is too much. And then he's driving at 3 a.m. to go dispose of said body parts when he is pulled over for driving left of the center lane. He stays calm, even though he's like flipping the fuck out inside. He's calm, and the officer shines the flashlight. The officer's talking to him, and he's calm and cool, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, where are you going? Whatever. I don't know what he said, but he shines the light on the flashlights in the back seat. Said, "What's in those?" Jeff's like, "It's trash. I'm gonna take it to the dump later today when it's not 3 o'clock in the morning." And the officer's like, "Okay, cool." But then he was like, "Why are you out so late? It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're 18 years old."
Reasonable question.
Yes. Jeff's like, "Well, my parents just got divorced and I can't sleep. So I'm trying to drive around to take my mind off of it." And the officer's like, "Hey, but I feel like you're a little drunk." And so he gives him a field sobriety test, which he passes. And he really was drunk. He passed it.
Hey, man. Some of us were really good at that.
Right. And I think he was at that point already. Because if you remember, he was drinking. Right. He was a full-blown alcoholic all through high school. So by the time he's 18, he's a pro.
I probably could have performed the kick line of Cabaret.
Yeah.
While I was fucking three sheets.
Yeah. So. And I think that's at the point he's at. So he ended up getting off with a $20 citation and sent on his way.
For crossing the center line?
Crossing the center line.
All right. Reasonable.
Imagine being the police officer that's like, "I pulled him over. I looked at the body parts."
To be fair, there are other officers in this story that deserve way more scrutiny.
Oh, for real.
We'll get to that.
I could imagine this guy, though, is like, I could have ended this. Mm-hmm. Sorry, officer, if you're still alive and I just made that worse for you. That was enough to scare him a little bit, so he went home and came up with a new plan for the disposal of this body. He put the body parts in a drainage pipe behind his house, where he left them for 2 weeks, because that's not stinky. Once the body
I feel like that was more intentional than people might know.
It is. I'm going to tell you why. Because once the body had decomposed, he took a sledgehammer and smashed all the bones into small pieces. And this is where in another place it said that he peeled the skin away from the body and then smashed it all up so that it was just like pieces of decomposed bone. It wasn't anything that was like...
I think it would have been... Had somebody found it past that point of being malleted, you see fragments of bones all the time in drainage pipes in, you know... Mm-hmm. Could have been an animal, could have been, who fucking knows? And quite frankly, after a bone is broken and bleached, you don't even know that that's bone.
No, no. And I bet that there was a lot more to this. And if I read, I bet I could read all the other books, but I'm trying to, you know, we're sticking to just a few.
Can't read every book.
No, but I'm sure somewhere it says like his exact method and maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Anyway, once he... sledgehammered the bones, he scattered the pieces in a rocky cliff area behind his house.
Smart.
Fly. Whatever. Pieces of bone. Fly. Far away. He burned Stephen's clothing and threw the retainer necklace into the... I think I'm going to massacre this because it's, you know, some out that way, Midwest. But it's Cuyahoga River.
No, I think it's either Cayuga or Cuyahoga.
Yeah.
I think you said it right.
We'll find out.
Somebody's going to tell us, and actually they're probably clawing at their brain right now, like saying whatever proper pronunciation that
Joe,
is.
Joe, let me know.
What it is.
But he threw the retainer into the river along with the knife that he used to dismember the body. Stephen's family reported him missing, but after a few months, the case went dormant. It was still active, but it was dormant because he was another hitchhiker that just, you know, back then, as we've covered, I don't know how many times, a hitchhiker. What evidence do you have? What do you have? Nothing.
You got nothing, dude.
He was walking down the road. Nobody saw him get picked up. The end. In Lionel's book, he talked about how he used to call the house to talk to Dave and Jeff after the divorce. But in August, his calls weren't answered for over a week. He went by to check the house because he was like, why are these calls not being answered? Oh, I don't know. Jeff answered the door. Lionel asked where David was. David, I don't know. Name David, they call him Dave a lot in the book. But Jeff didn't answer. He asked where his mom was. He's like, where's your mom? Where is Dave? And Jeff's like, he just stares at him. So Lionel looked into the house and saw a bunch of teenagers that all seemed disoriented, and they just kept touching things. So I would imagine they were on ecstasy. Yes.
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know when ecstasy and MDMA first made an appearance. I know that it was wildly popular in the 90s and in the 2000s. And it was popular before I started raving and taking it and shit. So I don't know if it maybe was called something else, but I know that there are other psychedelics and hallucinogens that make touchy-feelies equally as fun. So I don't know.
I think I just decided that it was ecstasy because I don't know my drugs.
Because you don't have any reference for
comparison. I have zero reference for drugs, period. And I had friends that did ecstasy one day.
Ecstasy is the most touchy-feely that you'll find.
And they said that they found one of those soaker hoses. And just sat there and played with the soaker hose for like a few hours or however long ecstasy lasts. I don't know.
Depends on how good your shit was and how you took it.
Apparently they just sat there and played with that the whole
that
time.
That doesn't surprise me. I've been on some pretty intense drugs. Not anytime recently, just in case there's any officers of the law locally that are listening to this. I don't do that. But back in 2006, when I went to Bonnaroo, it's hotter than fuck in Tennessee in the middle of the goddamn summer, and we're at a music festival, and I can smell my flesh cooking. I'm high as fucking giraffe's ass in the middle of Africa, and I'm like, we gotta find some shade, some fucking water. Like, I'm gonna have a stroke. Anyway, there's a misting tent, okay, that you can go get some shade, get a little wet, get a little, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, I just want everybody to know that the best time to experience a misting tent is in the middle of the summer in Tennessee while you're full of the best MDMA you've ever fucking taken. I can understand why that soaker hose would have been so goddamn fun.
Wait, what's MDMA?
So same thing in ecstasy. Oh,
okay. I'm like, hold on and explain the drugs to me, please.
Same thing. It's just like, if you can get like quality MDMA.
Wow.
It's a better fucking time than getting like an ecstasy ecstasy press tab that's been pressed with other drugs and fucking shit to make it the little pill.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
Which, I mean, those are equally as fun. You never know what's in them. Like, I know your drug dealer might tell you, but like, if you can't trust a drug dealer, who can you fucking trust?
What's that this press Ruflin? Tab?
Ruflin. You never know what they press that shit with. No, you could get fucking something that's nice and speedy or something that's full of ketamine, and then you can't fucking get out of a chair. Like,
oh God.
You don't know.
Nope. Well.
I sound like a complete junkie right now.
You're just knowledgeable.
Life experience.
Research. We'll call it research.
Fucking level up, motherfuckers. Yeah. Anyway.
Research for your current job because you need to right? know what they're on.
Dude, if a kid comes in fucked up, I'm like, ugh, call the nurse. He's full of fucking heroin.
Right? See? It's research. It was research. Anyway, so all these people are touching all the things and feeling textures. And Jeff finally answers the question that Lionel keeps asking about his mom. And all he said was, they moved out. Like, okay, what? So Lionel's like, what? They moved out? And he's like, where did they move to? And Jeff's like, I don't know. They moved out.
They went away.
So Lionel had his new girlfriend, Sherry, with him, who he had started dating. He talks about her a little bit in the book. But we don't need all the details about Sherry. But she walks into the house and starts to look around. It was obviously a wreck. There's hardly any food in the pantry. And the fridge was broken.
Okay.
So he didn't have any food in the fridge at all. Okay. There was a pentagram drawn on the coffee table in chalk. I was like, that's nothing to worry about. You could see that at my house at any point in time.
I'm like,
My kid was scared of ghosts once. Like, they're like, we found this old abandoned house, blah, blah, blah. And they were with my sister. And he was flipping the fuck out. I was like, draw a pentagram and get some salt. You know how to do this. Because we'd been watching
Supernatural.
She flipped out. She's like, what the fuck are you teaching your kids? I'm like, to not be scared of shit. Like, I thought it was funny. And he giggled and, like, was able to ground himself. And then he was over it. But
Jesus.
Either way. Anyway.
What are you teaching your kids?
To be human.
Witchcraft, motherfucker.
Yeah. Do you not do that? Do you not summon demons? I don't know.
Do you not know how to cast? Jesus. Yeah.
Hello.
Sort yourself out.
Yeah, so she sees that and then found out that Jeff had been trying to perform a seance to contact the dead. I don't know who he was trying to contact, but somebody that was dead, clearly.
Okay.
After they discovered all of this, Lionel and his girlfriend Sherry moved into the house, like back into the house, immediately. So one day, Sherry stopped by the house before an appointment and found Jeff drunk and, like, nearly passed out. He was at that in-and-out kind of stage in his room. She called Lionel and told him to come home because he was like, dude, your kid's drunk. By the time Lionel got there, Sherry had already gone to her appointment and came back. And Jeff was still in his room, like, half passed out on his bed. Lionel was shocked because he didn't even know Jeff drank at this point.
Oh, my.
This is part of the reasons why he's beating himself up, because he doesn't know. He didn't know he drank. He didn't know that he had a problem with alcohol. He still doesn't find out for a while. Jeff told Lionel that he had a few friends over and they got drunk. Like, whatever, dude.
It's not that big a deal.
Yeah. People do it all the time. So while Lionel's chewing his ass, he basically had no emotion and just said he drank out of boredom. So he's just sitting there taking his ass chewing like,
whatever.
Okay, cool. I was bored. Dad, I was bored. Okay. He was not only drinking, but he was stealing shit, I'm sure, to pay for alcohol. He had stolen two of Sherry's rings. When he was confronted, he acted like all upset about the accusation. He's like, me? Steal? And they knew for a fact that it was him on one of them. The first one they didn't know for sure, so they kind of let it go. And then the second one they knew for sure that it was him. But he was like, what? No. After this, Lionel spent a lot of time trying to find Dave. So after he's like dealing with Jeff, he's like, Jesus Christ, we have this mess, but I can't find my 12-year-old kid. He also basically told Jeff, you're going to college. If you're going to live here, you're going to go to college. You can't make your own decisions. You're an idiot. Go. So Sherry made a big deal out of it. And she was like, let's go get you some clothes for college and let's go get ready. And he had no emotion throughout the entire process. even all the way up until he left for college. In September of 1978, he started classes at Ohio State University. He wanted to major in business. However, during his first semester, he got a whopping 0.45 GPA.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have to like actively fucking try
to get a 0.45. Like, I feel like even I could pull a one.
For real though.
It's safe to say that he flunked out. So Lionel and Sherry went and got him and brought him home. They went back a week later to get his stuff, and his room was all nice and tidy, but there was a row of beer and wine bottles along the top of his closet. This is when Lionel finds out a little bit more. Because after talking to his roommates, he discovered that Jeff drank every single day. That he would stay in bed and not even attempt to get up all day long. Hence the 0.45 GPA. Like, how did he get it up to a 0.45 is what I'm wondering. Did he go to class a couple times?
Like, maybe for like that first day when you like turn in the assignment that is like your name and basic information.
Yeah. Like, you agree that you got the syllabus for the for the semester. That's
maybe this, that's the great. Obligatory GPA when you enroll.
Right? You can't.
You start
below.
With a 0.45. It doesn't get any lower than that. They just give you that.
You can't get a zero. That's it. So Lionel gives him two options at this point. Get a job or go to the military. Later on, down the road, Jeff says, I should have gone to college and gone into real estate and got myself an aquarium. That's what I should have done.
And got myself an aquarium. I agree.
I feel like that's my 8-year-old making life plans. I should go to college and go into real estate and get an aquarium.
Good choices. I like it.
A, you don't really need to go to college to do real estate, I know, because it's a little bit of what I do. And I don't have to go to college. Anyway, but I do want an aquarium, so I'm with him on that.
Right.
A big fucking one, like a whole wall.
I also need somebody. I have to be able to afford somebody else, like, managing that. Because yes. I know that they're a lot of work.
Yes. For shizzle. Because I want, like, a saltwater one.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole wall. Instead of the wall, it's an aquarium. That's all I need.
I have a buddy that can help you actually put that together. He's a legitimate... Oh my God, I would love to introduce you to him. His name is Steve, and Stevie used to work for Mark's Ark. He no longer works there. He works somewhere else, but he has many saltwater tanks. He has many, I'm talking like hundreds of pets, like fish tanks, tortoises, like hedgehogs, Madagascar hissing cockroaches, like crazy pets, snakes. Yeah, he is basically... everything I would love to be and do, but I'm also lazy and suffer from pretty awesome depression, and I can barely keep myself alive and clean now with the pets that I do have, so.
Well, I just want a big aquarium.
Anyway, he could actually help you get set up with that.
I could live Jeff's dream, real estate and an aquarium.
I'm telling you.
Don't hate me, bro. I didn't know it was your dream until after I already started living it, okay? Because I have a beta fish, motherfucker. Two
of them.
Well, Lionel dropped him off at the mall to go find a job because he figured he could, you know, go to the stores in the mall. And plus, I don't know if the state employment office was right there or if it was, like, close or if it was in the mall. But either way, he said he could get to it from there. So when Lionel goes to pick him up after the entire day, he was drunk as fuck, stumbling everywhere. Lionel refused to take him home. He's like, you know what? You've put Sherry through enough. I'm not taking you home like this. Call me when you're sober. Guess what phone call never came in?
Yeah.
The sober one. I know that from experience.
You mean an alcoholic didn't voluntarily sort themselves out?
In the evening, even? Do you know what you're asking here?
That's funny.
Yeah. So he goes, Lionel goes back to the mall at like 10. All the stores are closed and everything. He's looking for him. Can't find him. So he calls the cops. And he had been taken to jail for drunk and disorderly. Lionel bailed him out. Mistake number one. And basically told him, hey, bud, time to join the military. You didn't get a job. Military.
Bye.
So there's a weird timeline thing that I can't figure out, which isn't extremely relevant. But I found two places that said that Lionel remarried. Well, Lionel and Sherry got married on December 24th of 1978. When he's telling the story about this job thing, he said he was already married. So I'm not, okay. It's not that big of a deal, but just.
Timeline hiccup.
Yep. Jeff enlisted for a 3-year tour on December 29th of 1978. When he went in, he was 71 and a half inches tall, which is actually 5'11 and a half inches. tall, and he weighed 200 pounds. I did not know he weighed that much. That's why, wow, I was like, he was bigger than I thought, because I didn't think he weighed 200 pounds.
Neither did I.
So, I mean, that's still not very big. That's like just a little bit taller than Clint and Clint's size. Like, that's still not very big. Once his processing was complete, he was enlisted to be a military police officer.
Okay.
I don't know who was making those choices, but they choised wrong. Their choices wrong. He was transferred to Fort McClellan, Alabama, on January 12, 1979, for basic training. He did well in basic training and completed it on March 1st. However, his advanced individual training as a military police officer did not go well. And this is where his army troubles began. His alcohol use caused his unit to get punished with extra physical training. And
like you do.
Yep. This didn't make the unit very happy. So
no, you don't win friends and influence people by constantly getting you in trouble.
No. So they like beat the holy fuck out of him. Of course.
Like you do.
And that didn't teach him enough lesson, because it happened again. And this time, a few bigger soldiers followed him into the bathroom and beat him till he was, like, bleeding from everywhere. This caused him to get a concussion, and his left eardrum was ruptured.
Ow.
Yeah, fucking ow.
But that's kind of on you, dude. Like, if you get your ass kicked more than once for the same kind of shit, you're either a slow learner or you fucking... You get what you get.
Right? Like, at least he was drunk, I guess, and probably didn't feel it like he should. I don't know.
You feel it later.
Right? Maybe, if he sobers up. Due to his injuries, he was transferred to Fort Benning for medical care for 3 days.
Oh, he got a proper ass kicking.
Yeah, he did. 3 fucking days in the military. I don't know if the Army is like the Marines, but the Marines are like, you're fine, take some Advil, go.
Here's some sodium naproxen.
Yeah.
Bye.
Walk to the store and get some Advil if you feel like you fucking need it. You're fine. He ended up transferring to the Academy of Health Sciences at Fort Sam Houston. Mm-hmm. In Houston. You know what I'm trying to say here. I do. Because he didn't make it in the MP program. They were like, nah, that's a no for you. Let's try something different.
You can't follow the rules, so what makes me think you're going to enforce them?
For real. I keep giggling because I can only imagine him as a police officer, like drunk as shit, stumbling into people.
Dude.
Sorry, you're not very good at this job. Fort Sam was more laid back and often referred to as the country club of the military. Our friend, who wrote the book, The Dahmer Book, Stephen Lampley, was also there at this time in training as a medical specialist. Some said that Jeff was later able to perform his dissecting and dismemberment because of his medical training in the Army, but Stephen Lampley says this is so not true. He said they did not teach anything like that. They took the same classes from the same place. And of all the things they did, they learned, that was not it. It was more of like basic emergency training. So they learned how to bandage and learned, you know, basic emergency, not how to dissect and dismember and any of that shit. Jeff would often go to the NCO club and have a beer with some of the other students. He was quiet and friendly, they say. Some of them, there's so much back and forth of what people say about him that it's weird, because you'll see. Lionel said that he didn't see Jeff for 6 months because he was out doing all of his basic training and everything. But he picked him up for leave at the bus station after he'd been gone for 6 months. And he said he was a totally different person. He didn't smell like alcohol. He actually had a personality. And he stayed home for 2 weeks. Lionel said they had cookouts and played tennis, and Jeff helped with chores around the yard. And he was like, Lionel was just totally amazed at this transformation that Jeff had made. Transformation, my ass.
Tricked you.
Ah, joke's on you. When he dropped him off at the bus station, Jeff was like confident and ready to go. So the first time he dropped him off when he was ready to go, he was like, no, I don't want to go. This is scary. I don't want to go. But this time he was like, cool, that, you know, I'm going to go back now. Bye.
I got it.
Yeah, he said he like waved out the window of the bus and everything, and it was like he was a human again.
Well, funny how that works.
From there, he was transferred to Baumholder. I know I'm saying that right. It's probably Baumholder.
Mordor.
Something German. Yeah, so that tells you that it was in Germany. On July 13th of 79. He didn't make very good choices here. In case you had your hopes up, he didn't do it very good.
The transformation was not what it seems.
Yeah. On Fridays, he would drink till he passed out, wake up, rinse, repeat. Probably didn't rinse, though. He would miss meals to drink, so he wouldn't go down to the mess hall or whatever they had to eat, because he chose to drink instead. Once he started being a little bit friendly with people, he would have people come over and drink with him. He had a little mini fridge where he kept his ice and his booze, because he was always drinking mixed drinks. This fridge, however, was soon confiscated because possession of hard liquor was prohibido.
Like it is.
Yeah, so they're like, no, we're going to take this now. Not for you. He got transferred from his first room to another room next to him because nobody liked him. His new roommate later said that he could see how he would lure people in, though, because he was a likable guy. Except for when he was drinking. So he would make friends when he wasn't drinking, and then when he was drinking, he was a complete cunt. So there's that. He may have been considered likable, but one thing he didn't like was to take orders.
That makes the military difficult.
It really does.
From what I understand.
It really does. Like, one time he was told to take out the trash, and he looked at the dude and was like, go to hell.
I had somebody, when I lived in Oceanside, I actually had some lady Marines try to, like, recruit me. They were like, oh, dude, you're still young enough. Like, you're buff, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And I was like, but here's the problem.
I don't like orders.
You can't tell me what to fucking do. Not never know how. I don't run.
That would be my first thing. A, I don't run.
For like that is all. That is not even a negotiable fucking term in my life. And you can't tell me what to fucking do.
Yep. Yeah, mine would be, I don't
run. So like if Sergeant Shithead got up and started screaming at me and I had to spend my days fucking peeing until my fucking guts fall out of my ass. Like, no, dude, get fucked. That sounds horrible. I bet I'd be in so much better shape as a human being, though, if I had been in the military. Things would have been exponentially fucking better.
You live and you learn, right?
Is it too late? Yes. Send me to the fucking military.
Just a little bit.
Anything's got to be better than this.
We're a little bit too old now. Well.
Can I get the fucking senior citizens version?
For real. What is all the right. Senior citizen PT like? Please tell me.
DDP yoga from a chair.
They're probably, like, the officers that are older than us are probably PTing, and they're like, oh, this is just a, you know, dumbed down version of the PT. And we're like, what the fuck?
I'm over here fucking clutching my chest.
What did you just do?
We're like, coming, Elizabeth.
We're 30 seconds into it, and I've died.
It's the big one.
It's a big one. Fuck. So, yeah, he tells the guy go to hell when he tells him to take out the trash. Or, like, there was a guy that would tell him to go do something in motor pool. And he would sit there and stare at him, clearly not listening to a fucking word he's saying. Because in his mind, he's like, fuck you, I'm not doing that. And he would go down to motor pool, get in a vehicle, and go to sleep.
Okay.
Like, I like that choice. I would do that, too. Jeff went on a 2.5-week field training exercise at some point here in October. He was said to be sober the entire time and was actually promoted to private PV2.
Okay.
So that's good. That's a good thing, I guess. He had like ups and downs. So, you know, whatevs. Around this time, some of the Around this time, some of the other soldiers found out that he was a virgin and had never kissed a girl.
Oh, my.
They wanted to change this. So they took him to a brothel, like you do, and they sent him off with a girl. But he ditched out. He bounced the fuck out of there. And
dude,
yeah.
The whoever decided that being a virgin was a bad thing and that like waiting to have sex was a bad thing is a butthole.
I know.
Don't tell people when they're ready to have sex. I don't give a fuck how old they are.
Right. Yeah.
I actually had a manager. I'm not going to say his name or anything or like where I worked because then that would be outing him and that's not my place. But it was common knowledge that he was the actual 40-year-old virgin.
Oh God.
He had never, you know, he hadn't been married. He hadn't, you know what I mean? And he was waiting for marriage and he hadn't found Mrs. Wright.
You're missing out, motherfucker.
And yeah, so he was like in his late 30s, early 40s anyway. And I thought that was cool. Like, good for you. Right. Like, he knew that he wanted to be with only one person and that, you know.
Yeah.
So regardless of, you know, how awesome I know it is, I was like, good for you. Anyway.
Once he banged, he was probably like, why did I wait?
Oh, my God. For real. I just think that, like, the whole, like, we're going to take you out and make a man out of you. I don't.
Wait.
Stop
doing
that.
Let him do it when he's ready. And clearly for him, that wasn't.
We're good for him
up
for
the
fucking
wrong tree here.
Well, yeah, that dog's not gonna hunt.
Nope. But anyway, he returned to the barracks still a virgin, and his friends were not happy with that, not one bit. They would end up trying to get him to go a few more times after that, but he still didn't do it. He was often caught masturbating in the shower.
Okay.
However, like,
isn't that where you're supposed to do that?
Right. I was married to a Marine for, like, I don't even know how long we were married. But okay. He said that everybody was jacking off. Like, they would be like, hey, my turn to go jack off. Like, it was
I was going to say, like, if you're going to go and do that, like, aren't, like, you know, and especially being in the military and being in, like, the shared room and shit, like,
right.
Wouldn't that be the most reasonable place to go and do that?
Right. And maybe that was like just when they were in Iraq, just when they were, you know, deployed that they did that. I don't know. I didn't ask for too many specifics.
Right.
And so maybe that wasn't that way, like in the barracks where they could go, where they could leave and go to a brothel and pay some nice young lady for some vagina. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But they did make mention of it that he was always jacking off in the shower, which to me, I was like, okay, cool.
Sorry, dude, I have brothers and I raised a son. Like, I know that
right. They
do that in there. So that doesn't seem abnormal or weird to me, unless you're like taking 47 showers in a day. And every time you get in the shower, you're pulling on your wiener. Like, okay, that feels excessive.
Maybe that got weird.
Maybe you're running out all, you know, running out all the hot water. I don't know.
I don't know.
Fuck you and your pleasure shower.
Yes. Well, one time, Jeff was in the NCO club drinking, and an NCO told him that he had his own apartment and that there was a party there. And he was like, do you want to come to my party? And Jeff's like, okay, cool. Yeah, let's go. But there wasn't a party there.
Oh.
Mm-mm. The party was in his pants.
Perfect.
So when they got there, the NCO, like, smoked a bowl and drank some beer and then got in the shower. And he tried to get Jeff to go to bed with him, but Jeff refused and left.
Okay.
That kind of threw me off a little bit. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know if he wasn't.
I find that interesting that he killed somebody that tried to leave him, but he didn't want to stay with somebody that wanted him to stay.
Right. And maybe it has to be on his terms. Maybe it has to, you know.
Right.
Maybe he likes to be the person that's like, hey, you're mine. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Because that one threw me off just a little bit. On Thanksgiving of 1979, Jeff and a fellow soldier were invited to another soldier's home for dinner. There was a blizzard that day, and they were invited to stay, but Jeff was like, didn't like the sleeping arrangements, and so he didn't want to stay. Okay. I don't know what the arrangements were, but he did not like them.
Right.
He was like, well, okay, then I'll walk back to the barracks, and he left. In the blizzard. A few of the other guys left to go find him, but after 30 minutes, couldn't find him and went back to the house. They're like, you know, if he was dumb enough to walk, fuck it.
That's when you know your friends straight don't give a fuck about you.
For real.
Those aren't your friends.
Well, 4 hours later, Jeff knocks on the front door. 4 hours later, in a blizzard,
okay,
took off walking,
mm-hmm,
knocks on the door.
Okay.
His glasses were missing, and he had blood on his clothes. This is still one of those times that we don't fucking know what happened. Nobody knows. But he liked to disappear a lot. Remember back at prom when he disappeared for a while?
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing new. He's a disappearer. Nobody would ever know where he went. Once he went to Oktoberfest in Munich on November 22nd. He left on November 22nd of 1980. And didn't return till November 29th. And nobody had seen or heard from him. He went by himself. When he returned, he had blood on his clothes again.
Don't you start asking, like, even if I'm not that close with somebody, if they come back multiple times with blood on their clothes, I'm going to ask them. I'm going to be like, what the fuck are you getting into?
Right.
Not that it's any of my business, but what are you doing?
Kate, this is the second time that you came back covered in blood or whatever time it was at that point.
Listen, I'm not trying to get sucked into your weird shit. Either you're getting your ass kicked or you're kicking somebody's ass, and I don't want to be implicated either way.
No. Is it hunting season? Do you hunt?
What are you
doing? Is that what we're doing? I don't know what's going on here.
Should I be fucking worried?
Oh, so something that I didn't go into detail on or talk about at all when he was in his MP training that he didn't do well. He was a really fucking killer shot. Like, he was amazing at, you know, just, I don't know if that has to do with anything. I just thought of it. But, yeah, I thought that was kind of strange, cool. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it's something. So while in, there's a lot of speculation that he was responsible for several unsolved homicides in that area at that time, but all of them were women. There's no evidence and no arrests were made. This could possibly explain why he showed up and covered in blood, but it doesn't really fit his other victims.
I was going to say that's not necessarily his MO.
Mm-mm. And so it's still really like speculated, but not.
It's all speculation.
It's all speculation. He had a share of drunk and disorderly while he was in Germany. He had a lot of other run-ins as well. He didn't like to follow the fucking rules.
Go figure.
In March of 1981, he was drinking on duty.
Like you do.
The commander revoked his access or his access to classified material and was referred for discharge. He was like, you know what? We're done. I'm fucking done with this shit. Because it was like, he got caught doing this and got caught doing that. And it was all within a few months. It was just like one thing after another. And he ended up being deemed unsuitable for military services and was discharged from the army on March 26, 1981. Later down the road, in interviews, he admitted that he liked the structure of the military. Even though he didn't fucking like to take orders, he liked the structure. And he said that his time in the army kept him from committing murders at that time. While he was in the army, he didn't commit murders because he was constantly surrounded by other soldiers. So there was a few years there that people were saved from being murdered because he was in the military.
Thanks, so, Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Well, at least his time in the army did something good for us. Well, back at home, Lionel had received a few letters. Like, over the last few years, he'd received a few letters and a few phone calls during the time that Jeff was in Germany. But there wasn't a lot of contact, but he wasn't, like, overly worried. So, as far as he was concerned, Jeff was doing great. The lack of contact wasn't really a big thing because Jeff kept to himself. Until one day, Jeff's trunk with all of his military uniforms and all of his belongings showed up on Lionel's doorstep. He didn't know what was going on. He was like, okay, why is all this shit here? And then a few days later, he got Jeff's discharge papers. But where's Jeff?
No jefe.
I'll tell you next week where Jeff is. So, that's part two. I probably have two more parts of Jeffy. And that will be the end. The next part is going to be the dirty one. Prepare yourself for dirty. The next two are going to be dirty.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in.
Yeah.
And maybe don't come home with blood on your clothes.
Mm-mm.
And stay out of chalk lines. Goodbye.